Hello, lovely bitches. Welcome to another episode of Bitches on Comics. I am Monica Estrella Negra, and I am the only host today. Essie is taking a break to take care of themselves, so everybody make sure to send some love to them. Despite Essie being gone, we are still going to have an awesome episode because today we are talking to the author of Red Light and the erotic thriller Cam Girl, Sarah H. Cho. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem. Thank you so much for wanting to speak with me. I'm just going to dive right in. I loved Cam Girl, and I am a ex-sex worker, and I cannot stress enough how refreshing it is to see stories about sex workers that are not just necessarily about, oh, here's a sex worker, she died in the first like 2 seconds of whatever story or movie or song or whatever. But also the combination of, you know, exploring mental health, because I feel like mental health is still such a stigmatized concept in society today, even though it is something that we clearly have an issue with in this country. But I just want to know, because I also read some interviews about you, and you mentioned that you saw a lot of yourself in your character, Danny, specifically with your own experience with mental health. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So whenever I write anything, I think I put a lot of myself in the characters. They're not necessarily me, but they're a part of me from a specific period of time. And with Cam Girl, really the experience that prompted me to write this comic is I have bipolar disorder. And a few years ago, I had a pretty severe psychotic break that lasted for 10 months. And it was one of the worst experiences I've ever had. And that's saying something because I've been through a lot. And I just really wanted to write it as one, a form of catharsis for me, but also to, as you were saying, destigmatize it. You know, I think going through something like that, I was extremely embarrassed. I was extremely ashamed. I was really not in a good place of mind, but through writing it, I really realized that my experience could help others. And I'm seeing that today as well. And the reception that I've gotten has been great. And it's something I want to continue to destigmatize.
Yeah, I have a long list of disorders.
Same.
So it's just like, I'm just like, here's my list whenever I meet somebody new. These are the things that you need to be aware of. And I think that that's awesome because as a filmmaker, I also try to explore a lot of the things that I experience through these characters that I put into situations that may sometimes be fantastical, but like are a type of therapy for myself, especially because, you know, I have the power to control the narrative and like see what I want to see happen. I'm also really curious, who are some of your main influences? Like what got you into comics and what is your favorite thing about this medium?
Yeah, you know, I think some of my favorite comics, you know, a very basic one that probably everyone says is The Killing Joke. I also really love Frost. But my really introduction into the world of comics was actually through manga. And so manga is actually a really big part of my life. And so when I was a kid, I loved Skip Beat, D. Greyman, Eyeshield 21, which are all really small mangas. Probably even like hardcore manga fans don't even know what they are. And then, you know, I was really inspired by Hiromi Arakawa, who is actually the mangaka of Fullmetal Alchemist. And she's a female mangaka in the shonen genre, which is very rare. Mm. And then I'm a huge fan of Satoshi Kon, who makes a lot of really beautiful animated films, or he used to before his untimely death. And I'm also really inspired by Alan Moore. I think he is so smart and he tells such incredibly nuanced stories that really explore characters that have such psychological depth. So that's sort of like a little bit of a preview, I guess, of things that I've been inspired by.
Yeah, Alan Moore is like GOAT. He started a lot of trends in Western comics that almost border on cinematic feels. Yes. And that's definitely a feel that I got from Cam Girl. Are you a really big like cinephile, or do you take any inspiration from any like favorite films of yours?
Yeah, definitely. So when I'm not writing comics, I actually work in film and TV. And so some of my favorite movies are Fight Club, Trainspotting, Kill Bill Volume 1. In TV, I love Fleabag. I really loved Baby Reindeer, which just came out. And so I think, yeah, I definitely take a lot of inspiration from film and TV.
That's awesome. I haven't heard of Baby Reindeer. What is that about?
Baby Reindeer is great. It was actually one of the things that prompted me to write Cam Girl. So it's about this stand-up comic who's down on his luck. He's working as a bartender. And this woman becomes really obsessed with him and begins to stalk him. But what's really cool about Baby Reindeer is the main actor also wrote it. And it was based on a real life experience he had years ago. And so it's very autobiographical. And it's really incredible. I think I started the first episode just to check it out at like 11 p.m. and didn't sleep until 5 a.m. because I finished the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's really, truly incredible. And the fact that it's a true story makes it all the more haunting. Mm-hmm. And all the characters are really depicted in like a very nuanced way.
I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
Are you enjoying this episode? Then hot dog! You might want to join us over on Patreon, where our patrons get early, ad-free access to episodes before they drop on the regular feed. Usually. Typically. It's sometimes a few hours, but it's typically early. And in addition to that, we have hundreds of bonus episodes. Don't miss out. Join us at patreon.com/queerspec.
Needed money. And like I said, like I'm an ex-sex worker and like I do have a background in like academia, but like sometimes, you know, with the cost of education, sometimes you got to do what you got to do in order to make ends meet. However, the means of getting that can be heavily like demonized, especially when women do it. Though it's pretty much playing to a market that thrives off of misogyny.
Absolutely.
So it's just like, who is to fault? Is it the customer or is it the merchant? Like, I'm not sure. It's supply and demand, right?
Yeah.
And I also really liked how, you know, she was doing self-medicating things in order to like cope with certain things and like her weird boyfriend or whatever. And I'm not going to do any like spoilers or anything like that. But do you think that like in pop culture, like that line between like emotional distress and like wanting to be a sex worker, do you feel like that's sometimes seen as like a side effect of like going into sex work? Or do you think it just depends on who's actually, you know, creating that narrative?
Yeah. You know, I think it really depends on person to person, right? Their own experience with sex work. However, I think, you know, anything you do will impact you emotionally, mentally in some way. And depending on what boundaries that you've set up for yourself, it, you know, can be a very empowering thing, or it can be something that really damages you for quite a bit of time. And so I think it really depends on the person who's in the driver's seat. And I think in film and TV and in comics, like you were saying, I think who sex workers are is sometimes boiled down to something very two-dimensional, and they are often not the main characters of their stories, and they often do not have agency. And so you have a lot of depictions of sex workers who are either completely helpless and need saving, or you have sex workers who are, you know, these temptresses who, you know, tempt innocent young boys away from, you know, good lives or whatever.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, sex workers are humans who have a history and a background and a personality and have individualism. And I think that these stories need to not just tell the stories of a sex worker, but that character who happens to do sex work.
Mm-hmm. I think about Lizzie Borden's film Working Girls, which is probably one of my favorite movies about sex work, because in my experience, that is probably the most authentic view of sex work. And Lizzie Borden is she definitely said that in order to make the movie, she went out and actually talked to sex workers, which is completely, like, I guess, is revolutionary in the terms of, like, stories about, like, people. Just, like, if you're a director, shouldn't you, like, you know.
Probably.
Yeah, like, research your subjects, talk to your subjects, not just have this, like, idea of what you think they might do, you know.
Absolutely.
In that film, they touch upon racial fetishization. Mm-hmm. And when I had to, like, laugh when Danny was like, I'm playing into this whole, like, you know, incel, like, want of, like, having, like, this, you know, Japanese, like, girl or whatever. And I mean, first off, respect the hustle, but two, you know, that definitely can go even outside of sex work. Like, that can just be applied to who you are as a person navigating this world, and as a woman navigating this world as a racialized person. And I have to ask, like, is that coming from, like, personal experience that you just wanted to, like, get out of your system? Or were you looking to, you know, add this lever of truth to readers to know that this is, like, actually a thing that happens, and, like, you should probably stop doing that.
Yeah, you know, I'm friends with a lot of sex workers. I also went out of my way to do a lot of research and read a lot of interviews directly from sex workers, whether they were cam girls or porn stars or, you know, whatever it may be. And so that piece was extremely important to me because I really wanted to do this right. I thought people deserved that. As for, like, the racial fetishization aspect of it, one, yeah, I respect Danny's hustle. I mean, there are so many drawbacks that come with being a person who's a minority that you might as well cash in on the few advantages that you do get.
I'm just saying, like, if you got to do what you got to do. And if you know that that's, like, your customer's weak point.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think a lot of sex workers, what they're doing is selling a fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's racialized or not. But I did also want to use this medium to talk about Asian fetishization as a whole. Mm-hmm. And it's not on Danny that her clients think of Asian women as these demure, submissive creatures who will do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. She's just cashing in on that. But I did want to, you know, put a light on the men who do have Asian fetishes. And I think that's something that's not often talked about, maybe because a lot of men have Asian fetishes. So, you know, that is something that I wanted to explore, because whether it is in sex work or outside of sex work, I think that affects all Asian women, and also women who aren't Asian, right? Like, it affects what the ideal of femininity ends up looking like to society, right? And so I think that's also the reason why I wanted to explore that.
1000%. I mean, in Western society, the idea of what femininity is definitely coming from a Eurocentric view. Me as a Black woman, like, I am not the standard for femininity. If anything, Black women are oftentimes included in a lot of transphobia, which I also see as just, like, another form of subordination and just, you know, taking away our rights to our own identities. And so, yeah, I definitely understand that. But, like, I think that it's with Asian fetishization, it is so, like, commonplace. Like, you see it everywhere. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, if you're a chronically online person, and if you are, like, you know, into any type of, like, comics or manga or anime or anything like that, there are just, like, these pools of creeps that are just, like, very much unapologetic. Absolutely. About the ideals that they espouse. And do you have any, like, wants and wishes that you can see from even popular media enforcing these stereotypes? Because I also think that, you know, we've come far as a society from moving away from typecasting in film and television, but there are still some, like, egregious things that still are, you know, commonplace in episodes, whether it's, like, you know, the throwaway girlfriend who is always, like, a POC person, or, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, do you think that, you know, that there have been strides, or do you think that there is still, like, a very long way to go to move away from that?
there is still a very long way to go. I think we really need a variety of depictions of Asian women who have complex personalities, and also we can explore why they have these complex personalities. Like, I have no problem with certain Asian female characters being demure or shy, because there are Asian women who are demure and shy. But we also need Asian women who are outspoken. We need Asian women who are a little bit weird. We need Asian women who are just all across the spectrum in terms of personality, because that is the truth of reality. And I would say, you know, speaking to just the real world, what I'd really like to see is this denormalization of Asian fetishization. So I guess a stigmatization of Asian fetishization. Because, you know, in my everyday life, there are guys I hear that go like, I will only date Asian woman from Asia. And what that tells me is you have this idea of Asian woman from Asia being very shy and quiet and doing whatever you want to do. And, you know, even when I was in college, I would have some friends who would tell me like, hey, I know this guy, he loves Asian women. I would love to set you up on a date with him. And I'm just like, no, I don't want to go on a date with that guy who only dates Asian women, because it's a trinkification, I think, of my identity. And it means he doesn't fully see me for me. And also, it's pretty racist. Just
Very, very, very. I got the ick. Like, I'm just like, oh, that is not, that's not what everybody's expecting. And like, Passport Bros, I don't know if you've ever heard about them, but they're a subset. They're like multiple factions of incels, y'all. Like, it's crazy. But like, they're a subset of like, of men who specifically go to different countries in order to like marry women, because they have this idea that like American women are too blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Absolutely. You see a lot of that in Asian countries. Like, there's a lot of people who have moved to either Korea or Japan or, you know, whatever East Asian country their heart desires, to scope out a wife or a girlfriend. And it's weird. It's just weird.
That's very weird. And like, I mean, Cam Girl is like a thriller, and I can't help but think that this is like a real life horror situation that is going on. I don't want to spoil the comic for anyone, but you know, I think you did a very good job with the twist. Like, oh my god, I can't believe it. Like, I honestly did not see that coming, so that was fantastic. Thank you. Racialized like fetishization with the invention of robo sex workers or humanoid robotic sex workers. Can you just give me some insight as to what spawned Red Light for you?
Yeah. So it came out of two conversations. One, I was having a conversation with another writer who was telling me that a lot of clientele who go to sex workers, some of them just want to have a conversation because they don't have that in their real life. They don't have anyone in their life to really open up to and to be seen by. And I thought that that was something that was really, I had never seen much in entertainment or have seen talked about, I think, in real life. And the other reason that, you know, Red Light came about is, you know, every invention in the world has been propagated and accelerated by sex work. So like the printing press, for example, became really popular because it could print pornography. And the internet, for a similar reason, really accelerated because of pornography. And so it was those two conversations that I had with different people that I think really propagated Red Light. And so I figured if we ever came to a point where we had a very effective humanoid AI robot, people would definitely make her be a sex worker. And yes, I agree with you. You know, there is this, I don't know if you want to call it an evolution or revolution or I don't know about AI sex workers, but there is this, what is appealing about them? And I think it goes back to what clients find appealing about sex workers in general, is that they are willing to do whatever that the client wants. You know, there is no pushback. There is no boundaries. most of the time, some of the time, but particularly with AI sex workers, you know, there is no boundaries there. And I find that when I do see a lot of like, even just like AI friends or programs or things of that nature, they are very soft-spoken. They are very submissive. They are very demure. They're very appeasing. So I guess that's sort of my take on the future of AI with sex work and how those two sort of overlap.
And it's crazy how technology is typically, you know, brought about just for the gratification of men.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that can also extend to so many other things.
Like yeah, that's with, the
world. algorithms and like everything else. Like, who are the ones that are building these things and who are the ones that are coding it? And like, what type of bias is going into this development? And how will that thrive, like, once it's, like, you know, out in the world? And I just wonder, you know, because, like, they are going for something that does not have any agency or autonomy or have the ability to say no, do you think that in the end that's going to be more damaging for men?
Yeah, I 1,000% believe that. And I think you see that in the incel community, right? I think because there is that lack of experience with real life women, you see these incels really not understanding, firstly, how to have a conversation with a woman. But what comes out of that is an inability to really take into consideration their needs, their wants, their boundaries. And so I think it can be something that is extremely dangerous. I have seen, however, you know, certain AI bots or even like sex dolls that are on the market whose main purpose is to teach boys and men how to properly talk to women, which I think is a very cool use of the technology and could have great benefits for society. But I think that there definitely has to be some regulation. So for example, like with the real dolls or like sex dolls that you see on the market, there is a law that had to be passed that they could not look like children, right? And so I think that there are certain restrictions and regulations that need to be put into place, just like with any other technology, so that we don't end up with, you know, an increase in violence towards women or an increase in sexual assault or any of these things against women.
Oh my God. The fact that there has to be a law passed to make sure that it is not modeled after a child.
Yeah, which meant that it was on the market for a period of time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that is just, I don't even know what to say. I'm just like, that is a whole new level of yikes.
You know, I've heard arguments on both sides, and I get it to a certain degree. But at the same time, I think that allowing people to view these toys or these dolls as real life examples of how they should treat people in real life, that is a very slippery slope. So yeah, there should probably not be like 5-year-old sex dolls on the market.
Yeah. Because I definitely see like the argument being like, you know, well, if they don't do it to like real people, then they can like, you know, get out whatever. It's like, no, hun, they should go to therapy. You know, do everything but, you know, like, but like, you should really just go to therapy and work your shit out.
Absolutely. 1,000%. Because, you know, it's a very short step between doing it to like a sex doll to doing it to a real life person, especially if you don't respect the real life people in the first place. Right. So it's,
Yeah. Okay. So for Cam Girl and Red Light, you worked with CP Smith for the artist. How did that working relationship develop?
Yeah. So actually for Red Light, we did most of Red Light with this really incredible artist named Priscilla Petratus. Mm-hmm. And then CP Smith came in for the fourth issue to kind of help us out. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely adore CP Smith. He is so talented. He is so incredible. It's very easy to work with. And I think our dynamic worked really well because we trusted one another. You know, like I wasn't too precious about maintaining my script. He wasn't too precious about the art that he wanted to make. And it really created a really nice collaboration where we were basically bouncing ideas off of each other and evolving the story after seeing what the other person was capable of and delivered on, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a really great partnership that we had, and he did a fantastic job with both projects. And Priscilla was also absolutely incredible for Red Light and really hit it out of the park. And so I've had like great relationships so far with the artists that I've worked with, and I hope in the future I continue to do so.
Awesome. And do you have any future projects that you're currently mulling or in pre-production for that can go for either comics or film, anything like that?
Yeah, so I'm in talks with AWA, the publisher I tend to work with, on a third comic. So we're trying to nail down which idea that is, because I always have 1,000 ideas. And then in TV and film, I'm currently developing some projects, nothing that I can really talk about just yet, mm-hmm. but very exciting things. But yeah, if you've ever worked in film and TV, 99% of what you develop never sees the light of day. So who knows if anyone will ever see it.
Yeah. No, I'm also in that same boat. So I definitely get where you're coming on that one.
Yeah, you work on things for so many years and then nothing happens. But that's the nature of the beast. So we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully soon, you know, people will get to see something of mine. But I've worked on a few TV shows that have come out. So, you know, if people are interested, they can always check that out. It's very different than Red Light and Cam Girl, but I think that there is a part of me still in those projects.
Absolutely. What TV shows have you worked on?
Yeah, so I was a staff writer on Hulu's The Girl from Plainville. Mm-hmm. And then I was an executive story editor on Amazon's Them season 2, the second season. And so those are the TV shows that I've worked on in the past.
So are you into horror?
I love horror.
Okay. All right. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I love everything. I literally write every genre you could possibly think of. But I tend to be particularly good at horror, I think, because I have a fucked up mind. Yeah. In the writer's room, I would like pitch ideas and they'd be like, that is amazing, but why? Why is that in your brain? I do love horror.
They're just like, Sarah, are you okay? Is everything yeah. fine? No, that's totally rad. Because I also am, you know, more drawn to horror, and I've made all of my movies that I've made have always been like horror experimental.
Incredible. And
I think that's why I also just really, really, really loved Cam Girl, because one, I love the idea of us triumphing, you know, because the world is just kind of like against us in so many ways. So it's always just really cool to see work that is, you know, going against the status quo.
Absolutely.
And just like reminding us that, you know, despite, you know, being women of color, and in incredibly male dominated industries, yeah. I want to say like film, TV, comics, I think it's super important that we uplift each other and also just promote the work, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think particularly in certain genres, it is overwhelmingly male. I think horror tends to be one of those genres. Erotic thrillers also tend to be overwhelmingly male, which is interesting.
Mm. Very.
And it shows.
Yeah, no, 1,000%.
Yeah. And yeah, it's incredibly important, I think, to support each other. You know, what is it like? Rising tides carry all boats, right? Mm-hmm. And there's more than enough seats at the table. And, you know, I think that a female perspective or a non-binary perspective or an Asian perspective or whatever, perspective that's different from, you know, white straight men, I think adds something refreshing to media. And I think is much needed. And I think tells more original stories that are, in my opinion, more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Do you see like our work gaining even more importance with the sociopolitical like sphere that we're in right now?
The shit show that we're in.
The shit show that we're in. I was trying to be nice about it. I was trying to be like, yes, the things that are happening right now, just the slight fascism.
The slight fascism.
Yeah.
Fascism light. You know, fascism light.
Fascism light, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the reason I went into art in the first place is because I do have an activism background, and the problem I kept running into when I was an activist was when I would organize events or protests or these things, most of the time it's the same fucking people coming, right?
Yep.
And you can't make change by preaching to the choir. And entertainment is such a good way of reaching everyone because everyone has an incentive to watch it because it's entertaining. But with whether it's comics or movies or TV shows or fine arts or anything really, you can really experience someone's story almost in like first person because, mm-hmm. you know, like you are forced to walk in the shoes of a character, see what they see, hear what they hear, feel what they feel. And in that, growing a lot of empathy. And I think in these mediums, you're also able to weave in a lot of socio-political themes, which is something I really try to do in all of my work. And I'm sure, you know, you do as well. It kind of comes with the burden that we've had to carry, right? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to separate our personal experience from the socio-political issues mm-hmm. because they are so evident every day in our lives. And so I think it's really important that this art does get out there. There's definitely going to be more hurdles, I think, with how things are going. But hopefully we're able to make change and fight in this way while also, of course, fighting in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. I needed that. I needed that reminder. Like,
yeah.
Because sometimes you read the headlines and it's just like, oh, okay. This is where we're at.
You know, people like us, we got to keep putting out work because, you know, they're coming after DEI and we got to fucking prove to these pussy-ass straight white men who are crying about us taking their jobs that, hey, you really think we're taking your jobs? It's probably because we're better than you.
Like, meritocracy. Like, I'm sorry you're mediocre, but also I'm not sorry because it's not my problem.
Yeah, and also they're screaming about meritocracy, and look at what this administration is doing. Like, you added a journalist to a group chat. First of all, why are you having a group chat and using emojis?
Using emojis, oh my God.
It's ridiculous. And you added a journalist and did not notice. And like the tariffs, like no one, all the economists are like, I don't understand what this is. Not just bad, it doesn't make sense.
It's literally nonsensical. Yeah. Yeah.
And like accidentally deporting people to like an El Salvador like super prison and being like, oops, we just can't bring him back. Sorry. It's just like meritocracy, I thought. Meritocracy. Anyways, I could rant forever.
I get it. I think I saw somebody called that person who's in charge of the Pentagon. I don't want to say their name because I don't want to give any more credence to them, but yeah. Called them a DUI. And I was like, you know what? You are absolutely correct. Because we know that like we have to always be 10 times better yeah. than the most mediocre like white man in the
absolutely.
Room. And even still, it's not good enough. You
yeah.
know?
Like, no one blinks an eye if a mediocre white man is in a position of power. But even if it's a super competent, super accomplished person of, you know, whatever minority you want to insert, they give you the side eye and you have to constantly prove yourself. But you know what, motherfuckers, we'll do it. Whatever. We'll do it.
Exactly. And we will win because there's no fucking way. The incompetence is just,
yeah,
it's embarrassing, frankly. I like talk to some friends who don't live in the United States and they're just like, what the fuck is happening? I'm like, Doug, I don't even know what the fuck is happening. Like, this is just like, I don't even know.
Yeah, like the SNL sketches don't even have to change too much to be funny, you know, because real life is a joke.
I mean, the writers have, like, writers of satire and comedy in general do not have to work very hard. Like, it's actually very hard to figure out what is satire and what is, like, actual real life. Like, I always have to double check and make sure that I'm not reading an Onion headline. But it's also very disappointing when I realize that it is not the headline. I'm just like, oh, okay, we've gotten to this point. But yeah, I don't know. I still am very optimistic about,
I think so. Yeah.
Our futures, because I feel like once we throw in the towel, that's it. you know? And I know it sucks to have to keep fighting just to exist, but it is necessary.
Yeah, I will fight until I die. They can throw me in prison. They can deport me, whatever. I will fight until I die.
Deadass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Mm. Well, is there any way that our listeners can keep in touch with you?
Yeah, I have an Instagram. It's mostly just for friends and family, but sometimes I post things on there about projects. Just try not to like every single one of my personal photos because sometimes that happens. But it's at sarah.h.cho. The H is very important because there's 20,000 Sarah Cho's in the world. Sometimes I post about projects there. And yeah, I guess that's probably the main way you can keep up with me.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak. This was very much needed during this time. And I think it's really rad what you're doing. And I'm super excited to see your future projects.
Thank you. I'm also very excited to see your future projects. And we can kick ass together.
Agreed. And that's all for our episode today. And until next time, friends. Bye-bye.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the second half of the episode, what I like to call Bitches on Comics, where Monica and I talk about the nature of the podcast. I don't know if we're talking about the nature of the podcast, but we are here to give you a little bit of an update. First off, hi, Monica. How are you,
Hello. My friend?
We've already been talking for 30 minutes, but I'm pretending we just got on. I'm like, no, there was no pre-show chatting. Just kidding. There was lots of chatting, you know.
There was lots of shit talking.
At this point in life, I think that every conversation I have opens with 30 minutes of just what the actual fuck? And that makes sense. That makes sense to me. I think that that's the only thing that makes sense to me in 2025.
It's true.
It's been crazy. It's been crazy. Well, you know, we want to chat with you all today, just a little bit, listeners, because we have decided that here with this, our 199th episode, we are going to cap the season and go on our summer break a little bit early. We're going to talk a little bit about why, but really we're mostly here just to look back at the season that is and then tease a little bit of what you can expect ahead. For me, we're taking the break because, and I think Monica mentioned earlier in the episode, I was out taking care of myself. But I have had a little bit of a health crisis and I just need some time to finish healing and recovering and taking some time to try not to be stressed out of my gourd so that I can heal. And I am, you know, I'm looking forward to it, honestly. I'm looking forward to laying on the couch a lot and sleeping a lot. And enjoying herbal refreshments that help me sleep a lot. That is my big plan. Yeah, so, you know, that's one part of it. Another part is, you know, Monica and I have talked about this. I've actually heard this from a lot of people who are either friends of the podcast or former guests, future guests, hopefully in some cases. But it's just a tough time for folks. And it's never been so hard to schedule guests. I think this has been a time where folks are just needing to be other places, needing to do other things. And that's not to say lots of folks aren't out there doing great work, keeping awesome comics podcasts going and writing really cool comics. And we're so delighted to read them and enjoy them. But it just feels like a good natural point to take a beat, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Much agreed. Yeah. And also, you know, I'm busy with 1 million things also. So taking care of my mental health is pretty paramount. This is not to say that doing episodes sucks. It's actually pretty good to talk about these things
absolutely
for free, not even in therapy.
It's a great
just
point.
Kidding.
It's a
great I go point. To therapy too, guys. I'm not
I'm double dipping.
I'm not a podcast bro where I just project all of my shortcomings and try to disguise it as intellect. Anyway.
Anyway,
that was not directed towards anybody.
No, of course not. But nobody who listens to this holler podcast sucks like that, so we don't have to worry about it. Yeah, and then the other thing is, you know, both Monica and I are growing food, you know, and so it's an important aspect of building resilience in our communities and for ourselves and our families, and so that's the sort of really fun part that's coming up. I'm really excited. Things are starting to green up here in Vermont. It is starting to feel like I want it to be a month later than it is, which is how I know it's spring. You know, the only flowers are the crocuses, but we planted some this fall. My wife and I, for our anniversary, planted a bunch of crocus bulbs, and it's been cool seeing them come up, especially when I would have like had no idea what my life would hold at this point. We planted those back in September. The great thing is it's been a really awesome season. This is our first full season of you and I, Monica, being co-hosts. We've done 10 great episodes. I've been on 8 of them, which has been really nice. And then you've done 2 solo this year, which I think both have been really freaking exceptional. Obviously, today's episode with the lovely Sarah H. Cho talking about Cam Girl. What an awesome conversation. Really great episode. And then obviously also episode 196, where you got to talk to Tana Nariv Du, which was just, the coolest conversation ever, maybe. I really enjoyed being a fly on the wall for that one. So I just want to say, like, it's been so nice having you in the more full-time role. I think you've brought so much insight, and I love when you like have these little moments where you kind of just like go on a tangent and you're just talking about theory all of a sudden. You're like, oh, and then also this theorist and this thing. And it just feels so rich and layered, brings so much to the conversations. And so, and then particularly thank you for taking on those 2 episodes. I think it's so nice to have conversations where no white people are talking. So I love that.
It was a really good time. Speaking to Tana Nariv was probably a dream come true. And, you know, speaking with Sarah H. Cho is, I don't know. I really enjoyed this episode. She is a boss. Like, for real. Like, for real. And I just, like, really appreciate how she is, you know, bringing up these conversations about mental health and mm-hmm. how sex workers are people, too. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy to think about that.
What a concept.
a concept, if you will. But no, like, she is so talented, and I'm very excited to see what else she does in the future. But no, this has been great. I know that like us building up towards the season and just trying to figure out like how to do things and, you know, just build up our own rhythm. It's been such a fun process, and we've had so many good times.
Absolutely. I mean,
so many good times.
I can't think of an episode that wasn't an absolute banger. And so I'm going to do what I sometimes do, which is I'm going to name drop all of them. We started with our like 5 years of the lovely bitches. So we did our recap episode. That was super fun putting together, an absolute labor of love on our part and on Kate's part. It like in my head seemed so simple. And then the execution, I was like, hour 12. But it was delightful to pull together all those clips and share some of the, of what's, you know, behind us and think about what's ahead. Then, you know, we got to talk to Carolyn Cash about Pee Pee Poo Poo, which is like, I couldn't have asked for a better opening to a season, a better first guest. Carolyn's so funny, and Pee Pee Poo Poo is mwah, perfection. I had so just much fun there. You know, we followed that with Jasmine Walls, who had so much to talk to us about. We had Brooms. Mm-hmm. We talked about Vixen NYC. We talked about Mitch, the valorous farmer. That was such a fun conversation. I actually think about that one all the time because of how Jasmine talked about world building, you know, and like thinking about like what happens with the seeds. I think especially because we're going into growing season, that was a great time. And then of course, okay, I think one of our faves obviously is talking to E.M. Carroll, because we both love When I Arrived at the Castle. So getting mm-hmm. to be like, we read that how many years ago and now there's this new edition and we're going to chat about it? Like, get out of here.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. That was just such a good time. Yeah. And that, again, the reissue from Silver Sprocket is so good. I love it's the beautiful. Foil on the cover, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Go get it. Okay. So that's, we're only 3 interviews in. We only have like a few more to go. I'm lying. We have like 6 more to go. We talked to the incredible Vera Drew about The People's Joker. If you haven't listened to that one, if you haven't seen The People's Joker, rectify that. In my opinion, film of the year for 2024. Absolutely so good, so funny, so heartfelt, not at all what I was expecting. And then our conversation was so funny. Vera is like the coolest. I can't wait to also see what lies ahead for her. Make sure you check that one out. Episode 195. Okay, we're halfway. We got to talk to the incredible Natasha Alterisi about sapphic pulp. nice, sexy time, you know, like what a cool project. It was neat to talk about how she built that project and then also like have very serious, like calm conversations about smut. I don't know why. That's just something I really think is funny. Like, we're all like being scholarly about boobs and butts, and that's a beautiful thing. That's the world I want to live in. True. Then we got episode 196, that's with Tana Nareef Du and Monica talking about moon dogs and also the reformatory, which is like, you know, Stephen Graham Jones called Book of the Decade, and I think could not be more correct. If you haven't read it, please make sure you do. I think it is not to be missed. We followed that with the lovely Erica Hardison. That one was a riot. We laughed so freaking hard with Erica. Erica's so funny. Yeah. Erica is the editor-in-chief of Fabulized Magazine. Was also published in We Belong and is the upcoming So You Think You Know Static Shock. Yeah, got into like nerdy like journalism things. Got into like talk about Static Shock. That was a fun one for sure.
Also, Chicago legends.
Oh my God, of course. Yes. Legends. Yes. You know, I just like stand back and revel in the Midwest glory.
Oh, man. To me. And there's a lot of Chicago street legends, but yeah.
That was awesome. That was so much fun. Then we talked to the lovely Maria Dong, one of my besties, about her awesome new novel, Psychopomp. That was like a heavy conversation, but such a good one and mm-hmm. so fulfilling for me. I will like confess for listeners that I was on heavy drugs at that point for my illness. So I've been a little nervous about I only listened to it back in parts so far because I'm like, oh no, what did I say? But I've been told by Monica, Maria, my wife, and Kate that it was good. So I'm stepping into that belief. Really good conversation though, and I think a really important one when we think about prisons and the future of prisons, which hopefully is a future where they are all torn down and lie in rubble on the ground or are converted into housing, but I'll go for the rubble myself. And then, of course, today's episode, this lovely two-parter, two-for-one discount, I don't know what you want to call it, where we got to talk to, well, you got to talk to the lovely Sarah H. Cho about Cam Girl. And then you've got this little update here. We also have had a couple print interviews. We talked to Anas Abdulhak and Dennis Menhiri about theories. And then I got a chance to talk to Kizi Young about sunflowers. And it was our lovely editorial coordinator, Priya Saxena, who did the Atheris interview. And we'll have a couple more still coming here over the summer while we are on our hiatus. Other than that, we'll have a couple print interviews coming out just while we're wrapping those up. And then if I can figure out how, I think I know how, but I'm going to have to check with our friends over at our hosting service. But I'm going to try and drop some of our like best of interviews in the feed for the summer. If you've heard them, feel free to skip them. If you haven't listened, give them a listen. If you have heard them, feel free to give them a listen again. It always helps out the podcast and helps us. So if we just keep stuff in your feed, people tend to listen even to their back episodes. So thanks for bearing with us while we're reconstructing. Thank you for being willing to listen to some oldie but goodie episodes. And I just want to say, Kate, you have done such an incredible job this year. Thank you so much for making us sound so good. Priya, thank you for working on these print interviews. They're really awesome, and I'm looking forward to share them on our Patreon as well as on our website. Thank you, listeners. We could be here without you, but that'd be strange. Thanks to our patrons. We could not be here without you. You keep the mics on. Monica, you know I think you're the best. I'm so grateful for this season and for all your time. I'm glad we're taking some time to rejuvenate, and we'll be back, friends, with episode 200. Dun, dun, dun. Bow, 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 bow.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Bitches on Comics is a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Blue Sky at Bitches on Comics. You can sign up for our newsletter, listen to any of our episodes, find curated lists of where to start listening, read interviews available nowhere else, and learn about our other projects and upcoming appearances at bitchesoncomics.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also buy us a coffee or send us a one-time morale boost at ko-fi.com/queerspec. That's ko-fi.com/queerspec.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to our Patreon page at patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and you can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at essiefleenor. You know, the whole thing.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at my website, Audrey's Revenge Film, listed below. Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
If you like Bitches on Comics, you might also enjoy our narrative fiction podcast, Decoded Horror Channel, available wherever you get your podcasts or at decodedpride.com.
Be sure to check out our show notes to find a link to donate to campaigns engaged in important work.